Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You can never put that many personalities on one pole. Like, even when I'm training and Nathan's training, sure we're brothers, but like, something always happens where you have a disagreement.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The League of Ireland pod
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Hello and welcome along to another League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball. Johnny Dunleavy, welcome back. It's great to have you on board. And former Dundalk boss, Vinnie Perth. How are we doing, lads?
Yeah, all good.
Great stuff.
Yeah, all good, Steve. Good to be back.
Brilliant, Johnny. Well, the League of Ireland pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Rockshore 00. Refreshingly alcohol-free. Always be drink aware. Get the facts and see drinkaware.ie. Well, lads, it is back. After a long, long wait, this weekend marks the return of the FAI Cup, and we will be previewing a few of those big ties across the weekend. We'll also have a little chat around Shelburne's Europa League exit, and it will be a case of deja vu in the Conference League playoff, or will it not be? Jack Byrne has been in the headlines this week, but he's not in the Shamrock Rovers squad for Europe. We'll get Vinnie's views on that one. First up, though, lads, disciplinary matters. Let's get straight in there. For the second consecutive week, we've seen a red card issued to a Sligo Rovers player and then be rescinded a couple of days later. Now, we should give credit to the decision makers, those in charge, for calling it as it was and also processing these matters so quickly. It's usually Monday, Tuesday, or I think it was Monday evening last week when we found out about this one being cancelled. Goalkeeper Sam Sargent, of course, for Sligo Rovers, sent off in the 84th minute at home to Shelburne, who were 2-0 up at the time. Now, probably too late for a comeback, but you never know with these things. A team scores in the 86th, 87th minute. Who knows after that? We will never know with that one, though. But Patrick McLean then sent off in the 42nd minute against St. Patrick's Athletic last weekend with a score nil-all. And in the second half, the Saints go on to score three goals and win the match. Vinnie, before I get your views on this, I want to just read John Russell's comments after the game, because as we know, John Russell, as well as being a great manager, he's a very level-headed kind of guy, and very level-headed, I felt, in his comments afterwards as well. He said, for me, it's never a red card. There's a covering defender. It was sloppy play from us to lead up to that decision. It was never a red. He then goes on to say, we were well in the game. I think we've played better. I was urging that from the sideline, urging more from them, the players, that is. Even at halftime, I said we needed to be better despite the red card. I said we needed to move the ball better and penetrate more. There was a couple of straight long balls that we needed to play through the lines a bit more. When we did look at threat, Owen, that is Elding, had a really good chance. He was a threat from a couple of set plays. But as I said, the game changes after the red card. I would imagine if you're a Sligo Rovers player or John Russell, Vinnie, you'd be feeling really frustrated and really annoyed after those two red cards, especially the situation they are in, second from the bottom and battling for their Premier Division survival.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny you should read that statement, because I remember reading the following morning after thinking, oh, fair play to him. In one sense, he's held us cool, because I don't mind the odd time you see something and you can understand why a referee might make a decision, because by the time you replay it, he hasn't made contact, it has, etc. But I think if you're in the ground the other night and you were there for that instant, you would have known it was a mistake straight away. And that's the frustrating part between the line, two linesmen, fourth official. Referees can make mistakes, players make mistakes, managers make mistakes. It's a human game, and it's a bit like people giving out about it, but probably don't really want VAR in the league, and we probably can't afford VAR. So we've got to find a balance with it. You have to understand referees are going to make mistakes. I think he needed a hand from his team on the night, and if his team agreed with him, there's no way four people can get that wrong. But then going back to John real quickly, is where it's really important, and where we have to understand the frustrations of people, is that it's now a livelihood for people, between players, managers, coaches, and even my own experience of a couple of decisions in particular went against us and ultimately cost us European football in 2021. And I think that changed a lot of things in my life and people around the club I was at times life, and people made decisions on the back of not being in Europe and different bits and pieces. And ultimately, look, some of it, 99.9% of it, me not being involved, the football is by design, by choices. But these small moments are huge in people's lives and career, and we've got to be sure we're getting them right. Like, and I can handle the odd bad decision, it's part of football. But the one the other night, like, if Cork go on a run over the next few weeks, for argument's sake, it's detrimental for what's been done in that club. And I think it's a really serious matter. And I'm not in favour of banning people or suspending referees. I don't think that works. I think the panel is too small anyway, and the strength and depth's not there. But something needs to be done about that. That's not fair when it happens a couple of times in a row to the same club.
Yeah, we might come back on to the repercussions for the club, and also what action could be taken. Johnny, it was just interesting because Vinny there mentions about consulting assistant referees. Like, the referee in question did seem to have that red card out of his pocket really, really quickly. Did you find that surprising, or do you think maybe he could have maybe just slowed it a little bit, talked to his assistants and kind of just wait a few seconds before he makes the decision?
Yeah, I think that's something that came up for me in conversation with a few people, Steve-O, in that, you know, the referees, they need help. You know, they need as much help as they can possibly get on these decisions. And I suppose those two particular decisions in isolation, you know, were pretty much inexplicable. I suppose I'm very conscious that, like, the purpose of having these conversations is not to dig people out or to, you know, to point people out or point to mistakes and stuff. The purpose of it is ultimately to make our league better. Like, our league has to get better in all areas, and that includes refereeing. So I suppose, as I say, if you take those two decisions in isolation, they're shockers, and probably the refs themselves would, you know, would concur, and obviously them being rescinded at this stage, it's pretty clear that they were wrong. But over the last couple of years, I can remember numerous instances of managers, you know, who were irate after matches, and Vinny's word is exactly right. Like, this affects people's livelihoods, and, you know, God forbid from a Sligo Rovers perspective that they were to go down this year. But, like, going down means a loss of revenue. Loss of revenue means loss of jobs. It affects people's lives. And, like, it's just something that we have to figure out. We just have to figure out how we get better. Is it a case that the referees themselves have to get better? Is it a case that the processes have to get better? But whatever it is, it has to be fixed, and it has to be fixed quickly.
Yeah, and Steve, real quickly, they're all mic'd up, Johnny. They're all mic'd up. So there's four people have made that decision. And...
I know you say that, Vinny, but it did, from looking at the pictures of the game, it did seem that, you know, the card was ready to go. Even like I do take that point, and I know they are mic'd up, and sometimes you'll see referees will take a moment, but it just seemed this particular red card, it was out so quick.
Well, I 100% don't think we should make this personal, because, I mean, they're part-time. Some referees have to be willing to listen to other people, and they all aren't. And I know that from experience, you can get that sense. And the other time, a Ford official might say to you, well, he's made the decision. Yeah, but you can tell him it clearly didn't happen, for example. And you go, yeah, I know, but... So there's a reason why they're mic'd up, and it can't be just to come over and give this fella a yellow card. It has to be more than that. Eight sets of eyes are better than... or eight eyeballs are better than two. Like, and it's very simple. He pulled out the red card. But if a strong fourth official is standing there and says, by the way, are you sure about that? It can be rescinded before, if you know what I mean. It doesn't have to stand if you deal with it within a couple of seconds. I'm just saying, they have to work as a team as one of the solutions or part of the fixes. And they didn't. I was there. It just didn't work. And look... Everyone, we all know these things generally even themselves out in terms of offsides and corners and free kicks and the odd penalty here and there. But this is a little bit more serious, to be fair. And that's the problem I think players and staff would have with this one.
Yeah, and it is a serious matter for Sligo Rovers, and especially if they've lost points, that could be costly when they're all tallied up at the end of the season, whether they are in the top eight or in a relegation playoff. Just on the repercussions for the club itself, Johnny, because you've played for Sligo Rovers, and Sligo Rovers aren't bankrolled by a millionaire, multi-millionaire, whatever the case may be. You know the hard work that goes on in the background with regard to members of the club, supporters of the club, local community, local sponsors, all of those people that put so much into Sligo Rovers and what it means for them, these kind of decisions, how different it could be for, or, you know, what these decisions, what impact it could have on their support for the club and their fundraising for the club. And also the supporters as well, because supporters play, they pay their ticket fee every week or whatever the case may be to get into the match. And, you know, they deserve better than this.
Yeah, 100%, Steve. Like, I had a brilliant time at Sligo, only 2 years up there, and there's some phenomenal people involved in the club. It's just, you know, a brilliant football town, and they really do get behind the club. And I suppose it's just a case of, as I say, like, we have to get better, because these small decisions have just such far-reaching consequences that, like, if a club like that goes down into the first division, any club goes down into the first division, it's just so, so hard to get out of it. I mean, obviously I'm from Ballybuffet, take Finn Harps as an example. It's just so, so difficult to come back from getting into the first division from a revenue perspective, you know, the amount of people coming to watch games, attracting players to your club. And so, like, you know, overall, we just have to get better at it. We just have to, whatever it takes now at this stage, and if it is a case of the referees themselves have to get better, I suppose they have to take some responsibility for it. Or is it a case of that everyone, you know, sort of together in cohesion, the processes get better and we get less of these decisions wrong? That's all I would have to think about it, you know.
And I think another important point to Stephen that not a lot of people have discussed is, like, I was at the match and I was texting a friend of mine involved with football saying, I fear for Pats with about 5 minutes before halftime. I think he could implode, right? Where was me thinking on that? He had that horrendous European result. Sligo were bashing them without creating loads of chances. Sligo were on top. John Russell said it in his comments. You could hear him on the pitch. There wasn't a big crowd there. He could sense blood. And if Pats had lost that on top of everything else, another defeat, they most likely again in Europe this week, it could have been crushing for them. And it was a big job for Stephen Kenny to turn that sort of whole momentum around. And look, he sounded so happy with life after winning 3-0 and comfortable after that second half. So the ramifications went both ways. Pat's got a huge bit of luck. But Sligo will feel really sorry for themselves, and rightly so, from a football perspective, as in how well they were playing in the game.
Yeah, and Sligo Rovers have been in good form over the last couple of weeks, and certainly had the ability to get a point or points from that match last Sunday. Just to go back to the referees, Vinny, look, there, you know, some people have made comments about, should we have professional referees in the league, because it is a fully professional league now with regards to all the teams. You know, I don't know where you get the resources for that. Another point is that, you know, we've all seen throughout the seasons, and this season again, we've seen players going down, feigning injury, looking for breaks in the match. You know, we see players trying to con referees by winning free kicks, penalties, whatever the case may be, players diving, that kind of stuff. So they're not helping it either, because the referees are the victims as well when it comes to being trying to, you know, those kind of situations. So, you know, supporters, I suppose, and other people are, you know, stakeholders need to keep that in mind as well. So I don't want to seem as if we're referee bashing. They are also the victims in certain ways as well. So, like, where do we go from here? What is the next step? Are there steps we can take?
Like I said, I think the appointment of a team is important, particularly, I mean, you have to say that if you're going to put a fourth official in there, instead of giving someone a down week, make sure it's somebody like, you imagine somebody, or give an example, and I presume the 2 years on the line would know, say someone like Neil Doyle, you'd like to think Neil Doyle would go, do you know what, you're wrong there, straight away, that's not red. Or, you know, Paul McLaughlin, them type of fellas. They can't all be fourth officials. I'm just saying, if you build teams where there's the right people around, and people on sort of sidelines are strong enough to be able to say that, and referees have to be open to that. I just haven't got that sense. That's my one criticism over decision making, is what it is, and we can all make errors. As I said, it's that thing where it's got to be a team of them, between the four of them. There's no way the four of them wouldn't have seen that covering player, in my view, and that's a problem. We won't have full time anytime soon. There was talk a couple of years ago of what they called the soft VAR, which was to help the referees, because they can't improve in terms of the games they get in European football unless they're using VAR, was my understanding at the time. I don't think the finance is there. And legal, like I seen Var in operation in the Shells game the other day, and it was really difficult to stomach because you don't have the big screens. You're not sure what's going on. So it's a fine balance. But you touched on a really important point is that, I mean, skullduggery or the dark arts has gone on forever and a day. Myself and Johnny would remember loads of it in air clashes. It's part of it. But there's also some responsibility that players have to have as well. And you're right, like it's becoming so difficult now, particularly with cameras everywhere, particularly with social media going after people, the amount of players now that have injuries, that have head injuries, the amount of time keepers are getting injured. It's not good, and it's not good for the game. So we have to protect our product and not just think everybody's going to continue to turn up. We have to get the balance right and give referees a hand. So there's a fine line with all of it. We can't criticise them too much, and we've got to give them a hand as well.
Yeah, 100%. Just moving on to Galway United, lads, because there was obviously a bit of news from Eamon DC Park last weekend. They put out a statement saying, Galway United regret to announce that Ollie Horgan has stepped away from his position as assistant manager of the men's first team for the foreseeable future. Ollie joined the club ahead of the 2023 season and brought with him his trademark energy, experience and unwavering commitment. His contribution was instrumental in our first division title success and our return to the SSC Airtricity Men's Premier Division. We sincerely thank Ollie for his hard work and dedication during his time with the club and wish him all the very best. Bear Bua August Bannock Akara. Hard work and dedication, the two words that stood out to me there, Johnny Dunleavy, and that's something you would have witnessed personally working with Ollie.
Yeah, very much so, Steve-O. Like, I mean, he'll be a massive loss in Galway, both as a personality around the place and also from a hard working perspective. I mean, just what he managed to do in Finn Harps in 7 years on the budget that he was on and the quality of the squads that he assembled was genuinely miraculous. It was unbelievable. And that was just a testament really to the calibre of the man. Like he could convince anyone to come up to Finn Park, and he had, like, I mean, probably he was much more tactically astute as well than people thought, you know, when we were up at Finn Harps. And I have to say personally, I loved playing for him, but, just on the hard working perspective as well, there's one story that always comes to mind for me, like when I'm thinking about Ollie. So, like, in terms of opposition analysis, he was second to none. And if there was a game to go and watch, he would go and watch it. Didn't matter where it was on, he'd be there. So my first year at Sligo, we had a behind closed door game in Abbottstown in Dublin. So no, we were playing Cavan Peely. No one even knew about this game. There was hardly anyone there. Literally just the parents of the players. So we went out, Sligo, we had two teams that were playing 2-11, so I was on the bench in the first half. We went walking out onto the pitch anyway, and the only floodlit pitch in Abbottstown was the one that we were walking onto. All the pitches in the background was pitch black. There was no one over there. So anyone that was there supporting was on the near fence. So we sat in the dugout, and about 5 minutes into the game, I looked over, and this was our first pre-season match, as far as I remember, and we were playing Finn Harps away, first league game, let's say 6 weeks later or 5 weeks later. And I looked over the far side of the pitch, and the pitch black under one of the floodlights, there was someone standing leaning on the floodlight. So I thought to myself, I have a funny feeling I might know who that is, you know. So I one of the young lads beside me, I said, you wouldn't do me a favour, run around the far side of the pitch, pretend you're getting a football, you know, something like that, and just see who that is, see if you recognise who that is standing under the floodlight. So he ran around, anyway, he comes back a couple of minutes later, Ollie Horgan. Like, it's just unbelievable. He missed absolutely nothing. And as I say, both from a personality around the place and from that kind of dedication, work ethic perspective, he'll certainly be missed at Galway.
Yeah, he certainly will. And John Caulfield, it was certainly a shrewd move, and he to bring him in when he did, kind of took everybody by surprise, but it worked out really well. Has Mr. Caulfield made another shrewd move, bringing John Daly in as his assistant, former Dundalk and St. Pat's boss?
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually, just real quick, he's had to remind me of something there. I remember there was a bank holiday weekend a couple of years ago where there was three games in Dublin. And I was at the trade, I'm thinking, I'm the only gobshite that would go to these three games. Like, and I had to leave one about 15 minutes earlier. And Ollie was at the trade as well. And then I was going to a sort of a social event on the Monday, bank holiday Monday then. Sort of meeting up with people in Longford. So I wasn't going to the game, but I went to the game associate, and Ollie's there again. So he was like, I thought I was obsessed by football. I thought I am, but he's on a different planet. Like, and the last compliment they give him is, I hate playing against them. So there was a reason for that. I hate playing against his teams because they were just so, he was so annoying in a good way.
I think
when you look at Galway, I think that's a really shrewd move in terms of. It's interesting to get Johnny's perspective on this. So he obviously had John Cotter, for example, when he was successful, and I'm nearly reluctant to say, in case it's taken the wrong way, but the importance of assistant manager is so crucial in football. It's one of the toughest jobs at times, because you get some examples where they get praised, but also the amount of work they have to do between preparing the team, between the coaching element of it, and then the mental side of it with all the players. Their job is sort of to pick up the players nearly that aren't playing, depending on the character. And it's such an important role that I think John definitely needed a hand. And John Daly going in there, his experience with Pats, he's won stuff. He's had a wonderful career himself. It may not hit the highest level, but he played a huge amount of football in SBL and the highest level. So has something about him, John, and I think it's good to see him back in the game. But I think Galway, you could start to see signs of a bit of positivity. We're all hoping they do well for loads of reasons. I think it's important we keep Galway up. So I think John is a great appointment for John Caulfield.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Johnny? Do you think John Caulfield has made a good appointment there, do you reckon?
Yeah, 100%. I think so, Steve-O. And I think Vinny's dead right that sometimes your assistant manager can be overlooked to some degree, but a lot of the times the assistant manager does the majority of the coaching. The manager might step in, you know, when he needs to, on, let's say, pre-match days and stuff like that, or setting up a team shape or whatever. But on top of that as well, the assistant manager is like a bridge between the players and the manager. A little bit more of a friendly ear. You can kind of rely on them. You can go and talk to them if something's up, and sort of provides that. Yeah, it just provides a buffer between you and the manager to some degree. So it's a really, really important role. And I think bringing in someone of the experience of John Daly, as Vinny said, like, you know, he's already been successful as a manager. It's a very, very shrewd appointment. And I think it'll work out for Galway.
Yeah, best of luck to him in the new gig. Vinny, you were out on your travels as well during the week doing some commentary for Off the Ball. Shelburne 1, Rijeka 3. Was the result at Talca Park. Now, look, I felt Joey O'Brien, he's kind of really settled into the management role very well. They beat Linfield over two legs. Just a 1-0 defeat away to Carabag after the first leg, defeat in Talca Park, which was an impressive performance. They beat Sligo Rovers away, then beat Rijeka away, drew with Bowes after going 2-1 down at the weekend, another very impressive result. He looks to have used the squad really well, Vinny. What was your assessment of the performance on Tuesday?
I thought it was from his perspective. I actually think if you're coaching now, if you're a player, should almost be forced to listen to Stewie Bourne's interview on Off the Ball this week. I thought it was exceptional, and it summed it up really well. And we touched on commentary and. What I mean by that is, I think the manager got everything right over them legs. And it'd be interesting to get Johnny's perspective on this. Coaching staff and managers create a picture for you, okay, as best they can. But then in-game management, particularly when you go to the next level and you go where there's big crowds, a lot going on, sometimes players have to seize the moment. And I thought Shells, like, Rijeka weren't overly quick. So that's one way of explaining it to you. So say you are marking the right winger and you're the left back.
So just before quick. You say, just to go back to you, say they create a picture for you, okay? So you're basically saying they lay out to you what way this team plays. They'll give you maybe a video of the man you want that you're going to mark. This is how he runs. It might cut in on his right foot here. So they'll give you all that information before the game. That's the picture you're talking about creating. And then on to what you're going to say next.
Yeah, so everything to the details of if he takes a corner and one hand is up, generally that's this. If he, fellas have certain traits where they might even drop a shoulder and drop onto the to their right foot, even though they're left footed, and it's to paint all those little pictures at the level of detail you get into, okay? And particularly around Europe, because domestically, you see, you know, you would have known the strengths of if you're playing against a Johnny DeLevy, a Richie Tell, all them lads, you know when they arrive. So in Europe, you create the picture. And particularly in the first legs, you're not sure exactly how quick they are. You go and watch them, but it's never set in stone. So a great example from a player's point of view is I use a right winger going against the left back. If he runs at you two or three times and hasn't got the legs on you, as much as your manager will create a picture about being solid and staying in the game as Johnny has done, that left back has to go, this game is on to go and win here. And collectively as a group, players have got to seize the moment and go, do you know what? If I go forward here and get to the end line and whip two crosses in, I'm quick enough to get back on this guy. And they're the little moments where Phil Shells probably lacked that little bit of experience. And Shuey talks about brilliantly, and he'll do it better than me. I spoke to Dave McMillan at halftime in the game the other day. Dave has spoken about it as well. And there are people who have experienced Europe where you just look around at each other and you go, this is on. And I don't mean you go away from the manager's tactics. I'm not saying that for one second. It was what Joey done was brilliant. It was a 5-3 sort of one-on-one, okay? And Kieran McEnroy in particular was exceptional. He's the one that got after people and went, no, didn't respect anybody in particular. And Bang was very good as well at wing-back. But the experience, Shells need to get back into Europe to do this again, to go... and or else go this way where you win the playoff game and then have all of these European games. And they've got to learn from the other night. Not that they've done an awful lot wrong. They were beaten by two world-class goals and a brilliant finish for the third one. But just to go and seize the moment, and because Europe doesn't only comes around sometimes once in your career, sometimes two, three, maybe you're lucky. And I think listen to what Shuey said. It's online. It's on the OTB socials. Yeah. If you're a player,
get that on the Goal Out app. If you download it, you'll be able to listen back.
Yeah, he was exceptional on it, and he's experienced as a player. And I understand that as a coach. It's not that you get offended, but the lads have started to do their own thing. They just win the little battles, seize the moment, and Johnny will tell you that. Like as much as you have to domestically. If Johnny's marking a Pat Hogan, he knows. He knows what he's doing. He knows. Doesn't mean he can stop him, but he knows. But he also knows what his strength is against him, as in, well, he mightn't run back after me, or he mightn't like it if I give him a thump in the back of the head, whatever it is. And I just think that's the one small criticism I'll have Shells do tonight in terms of the players. Probably it was there to go, because, as I said, I think Rijeka were a quality side. That midfield three of Dantas, Pietrick and Farouk were exceptional footballers. I lucky enough to be involved in a lot of games, and I go to nearly every European game if I can. I think it's important from coaching perspective and all that stuff. That three were as good as our three against any opposition. Close with Besiktas' three as well were exceptional, to be fair. So they had their work cut out, but they probably left a little bit behind, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say it was frustrating for them, Johnny, as players, like to get the penalty, to score it, and then to, you know, maybe taking the match to or the tie to extra time, like to concede that late goal. And maybe that kind of, you know, links in what Finney's saying about players needing to take responsibility within the game as well.
Yeah, definitely somewhat. I suppose when you concede that late in the game, it is always sickening. I mean, Shelburne going into the game would have been saying to themselves, look, let's not concede anything soft. And in fairness to them, they didn't. They conceded some absolute pearlers. just to Vinny's point, I suppose it's as you move up the levels, really, in European football and stuff now. Like, I played a few European games, not as many as a lot of these lads have and will. But really, what I noticed the major difference in these players, and this it's probably the same in England actually as well, there is a difference in terms of their physicality and their, like, sometimes their technical ability, but also their decision making. They make better decisions more often. So, like, let's say, take England, for example, in League Two. You'll have players in League Two that, on a given day, could play in a Premiership, no problem at all. Could look like a Premiership player, no problem at all. But consistently over the course of a season, they won't make as many good decisions as a regular Premier Division footballer will. And probably for the Shelburne lads, looking back on it, and listen, it's in the back pocket now. They'll have learned from it. They're going to get another chance against either an infielder or Vikinger. But it's just when those opportunities arise in a game where something you spot yourself, as opposed to manager told you everything, games are analysed to death, as Vinny says, boys know which way lads are going to turn, what's their stronger foot, which way they drop a shoulder, everything, they're analysed to death. But then there's moments in games where something happens where you have a decision to make. And if you make the right decision, it can, you know, it can lead to something for your team, or lead to a change in the game. And I think that's exactly right. As I say, it's something that Shelburne ultimately will learn from, and hopefully will be able to bring into their next time.
Yeah, and look, we won't labour the point too much, Finn. You want to touch quickly on the Linfield possibility, or Vikan Gur. Just what Johnny's saying there, but the decision making, does that go all the way back to coaching underage? Does that go back to, you know, the old thing of, you know, Irish football not getting kids enough contact time with the ball, something Damien Duff was going on about for quite a while? I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but like something he was trying to hammer home. Is that where that comes from? That, you know, contact with the football, the amount of hours training you do as a kid underage?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all things. It's experience is huge. But the one thing you do see in a lot of these sides is their technical ability. Where Shell struggled was to keep the ball for long periods of time. And that's probably the difference. And when you look at Rijeka, their game plan was to speed up the play. They obviously, you could tell by the coach, he was losing his marbles, and he was trying to basically get the right side centre half to miss the left one and go to the left back. So he was trying to move Shells around quickly. And rightly so, because Shell's played that narrow midfield three and they were trying to get out there. But when you compare that to what Shelburne were doing, the one time they got that chance off, Meepo got across, John Martin, they played out from the back, they drew them in a little bit and then flipped one over the top. They just didn't do that enough. And it's a combination of all them things. Technically, you've got to be better on the ball. We're probably not having enough contact time on the ball, the decision-making, experience, and playing at high level. So, yes, Shells play Pats this week, but I think there's a couple of things real quickly on Shelburne. Is people will say, the argument will be Linfield are further down the line if it happens to be Linfield they play in that game, because when they played first time, it was early on the season. Now they've played four or five games. But I think Shelburne have improved. They've improved for two reasons. They've improved for Joey O'Brien, and there's a freedom, but also they're playing at a higher level. And ultimately, the more regular times you're playing at a higher level, you improve. And that's the challenge. There's not strength and depth in underage football in our country. And it's clear to see. Look at the results. Teams are winning under 17 and 16 National League games, 19-5 and 6 and 7-0. So that doesn't create an environment. So that's ultimately what's going to happen. And I touched on this at the start of the commentary the other night, and I've changed my mind on it a little bit. But I think it's important just to make the point. Myself and Jonathan were hoarse at the end of the game. It was a brilliant occasion. I celebrated that goal as if it was one of my own team. But I think it's important to say it and repeat it, is there's just no excuse that game wasn't live on TV, Steve-O. The national broadcaster, what Irish football, the most participated sport, does for this country, between culturally and socially, the amount of kids out every single evening, and for local football clubs. And when our League of Ireland champions are playing in European football like that, there's no excuse that's not on TV by a state-funded organisation. It's just not good enough. It was a wonderful occasion. Everything about it was brilliant. Yes, it was disappointing in the end, but for that not to be on national TV ain't good enough, and we have to call it when we see it. I just felt it was so disappointing, because it was a wonderful night and a great spectacle before our sport. They've got to follow the champions, at minimum. The national broadcaster has to find the money to follow the champions in European football.
Yeah, it certainly was a real shame that a game of that size and with so much riding, it was like, you know, basically the side that went through earned nearly €4 million. So you would think it should be getting the national broadcaster treatment. Johnny, Vinny touched on Linfield there. They are further down the road. They're 2-1 down as they host the Viking Gur from the Faroe Islands this evening. We're not going to go too in-depth on Rovers and Pats today because we record on Thursday and those games will be done by the time you hear this. But just on Linfield, if it was Linfield to go through, and you know, there's no guarantees there, but I'd imagine David Healy, who was at Talca Park the other night, he might fancy his chance as well, because it was just a narrow 1-0 win for Shelburne at Talca Park, and then they drew 1-1 up at Windsor Park. And yeah, I'd imagine it's not exactly the tie that Joey O'Brien would fancy.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, Steve-O. Like, I suppose Linfield would have been disappointed with the defeat against Vikingur away, first of all. I still really would expect them to get through this evening, but I think Finney's probably right enough in that Linfield have to get to Shell's level and not the other way around. And Shell's are learning all the time under Joey now. You can see it. And playing against opposition, the calibre of what they did the other night can only do the lads good. It really can only do the lads good. And obviously their league form has been exceptional. So personally, I think the Shell's lads would enjoy the expectation of playing Linfield again and probably being favourites in the tie, realistically speaking. And personally, I would expect them to go through. So, no, I think it's something that Joey O'Brien would look forward to as opposed to be dreading them.
He's built a decent squad as well in the last few weeks, hasn't he, Johnny, in terms of some of his recruitment?
Johnny, very much so. He's supplemented it as opposed to, like, you know, just sort of staying with what he had. Like, it definitely, very much so, more depth than.
Yeah, Johnny, we did that game against Shelburne a few weeks back down at Turner's Cross, and Mbeng was one of the standout players that night, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever seen him play in person, Steve, and I have to say he was exceptional on the night. Just his pace and his power, he obviously delivered a phenomenal cross for a Shawnee Maguire header. You know, he's got that quality in the final third. He defended well 1v1. Like, we were both very, very impressed. And it's a shrewd piece of business now to get him in at this stage of the season. I have to say, someone that, you know, we talked about it before in terms of recruitment, bringing in lads that know the league. He now has some experience in the league. He knows what it's all about. He knows what the different grounds are all about. So, no, I think it was a really, really good move by Shales.
And the other one is Harry Wood, since that goal against Bailey.
He's been brilliant
last year. I mean, they're all talking about Davoy and different things. He's not at that level, but I'll tell you what, he's not far behind. Like, he's a cert for team of the year, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like a little Duracell bunny, isn't he? Running around the place. Like, the guy has just so much energy and a really tricky player. Very, very good on the ball. Just to move on then, as I said, we won't go too heavy on the other European ties. We can chat about them next week. But just on the Jack Byrne issue, Vinny, I know this caught your eye during the week. Dan McDonald on Wednesday reporting in the Irish Independent about an issue that he had with head coach Stephen Bradley. The story in the Indo went in an 11v11 training match on the eve of the fixture. It became clear that Byrne was not going to be starting for the meeting with the Candy Stripes, Derry City, obviously, when the player took issue with his positioning in the shadow team. Words were allegedly exchanged, and the upshot was the Dubliner was left out of the Derry City match and excluded from the squad for the Balkany tie, with new arrival Conor Malley stepping up the pecking order. Now, Stephen Bradley was asked about it then on Wednesday after the story came out. At the pre-match press conference, he said, "We have a big game tomorrow. We'll be focusing on the team and the squad that's available to win the game tomorrow. There'll be no other talk today." When he was asked to comment on the situation, he confirmed that Byrne was not injured before shutting down further questions. He went on to say, "We focus on what we do. We focus on the group. We always have. We go Thursday, Sunday. You see what they're like on Sunday." That was in the scoreless draw against Galway last week. "And how in tune they are with the game. These players move on and focus. That's what they do." What do you make of that one, Vinny?
There's loads to unpack in that. I think, fair, we've all known this for a couple of weeks. So there's obviously a reason now it's good for the story to come out. So people have obviously said, yeah, work away with it. I think it's been known for a couple of weeks that something had gone on. Johnny will tell you, see them. So to give people listening who haven't been on the training ground, for example, on the minus one, the 11v11 is basically a chance. So if we're playing against Cork, okay, and I'm at Dundalk, we'll do 11v11 the day before, and that's just got through your set pieces, how they'll come at us from a goal kick, corners, if they play a strange shape. So with Cork, we used to get people to half volley the ball into the box because that's the way they play it. I joke, of course.
no, but you bet you can't volley it like Conor Keighley up at Drogheda United, huh?
Yeah, oh, go on. That one. Yeah. So you create a picture, right? So, for example, if they've a 6'4" centre forward, I might say to Johnny, "You play." If he wasn't in our team, you'd say, "You play as the centre forward." The challenge with that is, I'm at risk of Johnny going to me, "You winding me up like." I'm a centre half. Don't send me up there. Piss off. And so two things you've done is I've left Johnny out of the team, and then I've asked him to be the big dope up centre forward. He's looking at you going, are you winding me up? So that's where the assistant manager has a job to do, because he's probably managing the bibs. So going back to that point. So if ever there was an argument going to happen, that's when it is. So Jack's obviously looking at that and going, and I think there's other stuff going on and whatever. We don't know the full story of it. And he could have been asked to be a right wing back for all we know, right? Just for argument's sake, we don't know. So that's where a lot of this stuff, that's when a lot of the trouble happens over experience. And it's difficult because players are feeling a bit sore because the team is probably just being announced 10 minutes before that. And then you go into the shape. So look, the long and short of it is a lot of the stuff is kept in-house. Generally, it does get out at different stages for whatever reason. I think it'll be a bigger story if Rovers go out of Europe tonight. I think it'll be a much bigger story then. If they win, the manager will be told he's great to have the high ground. And I think if they lose, you'll be told one of your best players isn't playing. What I will say about Jack real quick is Jack Bourne got back to his very best this year at times. He is still one of the best players. He is the best player in our league, probably. And he did show that for a month or so, maybe 2 months earlier on the season. So I'm a little bit surprised by this, but he obviously don't feel he's overly suited to European football. They tend to play with a bit more pace and legs. So it's watch this space. It feels like there's a long way back from.
Just on it, Finny, because like if you're in a situation like that and you have a falling out with the player on the pitch, on the training pitch and all that kind of stuff, and listen, I don't want to question Stephen Bradley because he's arguably the best, as a coach, the best man manager in the league, because he has a body of work there to prove it. The amount of big players, big names, some awkward characters he's had to deal with over the last number of years, and has the trophies to show that he has managed that all really well. But when you've got a player as talented as Jack Bourne, was there another way of maybe disciplining him without leaving him out of the squad? Or
It depends. It depends if it's the first time. We don't know. And the bottom line is, this happens all the time, Steve. Mm. It's just when you're winning and when the media are generally on your side, which happens, it doesn't get out. I mean, as I said, this story's around a lot longer than the other day. I've experienced the noise where people hear stories about your club. There was worse stories going on and they never get out. And then it suits the narrative for them to get out. So, look, I'm not sure there's a better way. It's not the first time it happened. But Stephen obviously felt it was right to do what he'd done. So, and to be fair, Jack felt it was right to do what he'd done. So we'll probably never know the truth. It's too flippant to say there's a better way to deal with him, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be keeping a close eye on Stephen Bradley's post-match interview after that game.
How many scraps did you have, Johnny? You've been left.
I was just about to say, he's too nice. I can't see Johnny falling out with a gaffer.
And you know what? Too nice sometimes, Steve. I'd say now when the head went, the head really went. Like, you can ask John Cotter if he was refereeing small set of games, like, he got awful grief. It wasn't a case of being left out of the team too much, and then I was more injured if I was out of the team, and that was a very common theme. But look, it's a tough one to manage, like as Vinny says, and really, you know, who would be a manager in the sense that you're only going to get judged by the results at the end of the day. So Stephen has made a decision based on the group as opposed to the player. That's what probably objectively you have to do. But as Vinny says, if the results now go against him for the next two or three matches, you'll be judged very harshly on it. And that's just the joys of being a manager.
Yeah.
But you know what was always gas about them ones, Johnny? Do you remember, like, if a fellow was being left out, there's always one lad in the squad that was there talking to him. The same fella, you know, if I was the gaffer, you'd be playing that type of stuff. Like, you know,
Now,
I remember I used to push it a little bit. Steve, I remember Dane Massey getting left out once and he was heartbroken about it. And we started to warm up and I just went off in front of everyone, went, Dane, if I was the gaffer, you'd be playing. And everyone, like, we broke our heart out and Dane just looked. I won't tell you what he said to me, but just like, oh, no, not now. But sometimes you do need that moment where you just take the sting out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's there's a fine balance to it, like, you know.
Yeah, It's lucky, yeah, Vinny's got a good sense of humour as well, isn't it, Johnny? Because it certainly makes the podcast more listenable. I joke. Come here, lads, FAI Cup weekend this weekend. Now, we don't have time to touch on all the ties, but I think it was a really good draw. We know the four Premier Division sides are going to go out this weekend. So just a quick run through the fixtures. Bohemians hosting Sligo Rovers. Waterford go to Cork City in a massive Munster derby. It's Finn Harps at home to Bray Wanderers. Great chance for one of those two clubs, as it is for Kerry and Cove Ramblers, the other Munster derby in this third round. And then we got a Connacht derby. Salt Hill Devon taking on Galway United. And then it's a replay of last year's final. Derry City at home to Drogheda United. St Patrick's Athletic against Shelburne. Massive Dublin derby there. And then Shamrock Rovers against Longford Town. Let's just have a look at the standout ties, I suppose. Vinny, Derry City home to Drogheda United. Kevin Doherty's team will be hurting, I'm sure, after dropping those 2 points to Waterford last week. And Derry City, they'll be hurting, I'm sure, from the final. Will they use that? I know a lot of the players that played in the final are gone, but there's still a couple there. Do you use that kind of hurt from losing that final last year when you're going into this game tomorrow?
The manager wasn't even there. I think as much as they're in a decent league position, I'd say that a big pressure is on Derry. Would you, Johnny, in terms of as a player, you feel like, I think that's a huge game for them.
100%, Vinny. Like, and if you look at it now, coming down to the business end of the season, they're without a 1-3 and have only scored one in their last four.
Yes.
Like, since they hammered Waterford up in Derry, they've only scored one in their last four. And when you're coming down to these really, really meaningful games, it's something that the manager is definitely going to be conscious of, on top of Liam Boyce actually coming off after 55 minutes the other day, which is not going to be a help either. So, yeah, I'd say going into it, definitely, it's probably a more pressurised tie for Derry, for sure.
And it's does it sort of, the retrograde, the manager needs time, and of course he does, 100%. We get that. But they've, you just don't know what Derry can, you don't know whether they're going to sign two players this week and turn up with two or three new players. You know, it's been a lot of change there, and probably too much change too soon. So it's a big game for them. I sort of fancy them to win, though, in a strange way. But I think, yeah, it's a big pressure game for them.
Yeah, and I actually spoke to Kevin Doherty. We were commentating on the game against Waterford last week, and I did a post-match interview with him, and I just asked him, like, is there a sense that you're... Because, you know, I remember years ago, Jim Gavin was managing the Dublin senior footballers, and he was always of... His mentality was, and it fed through to the players as well, you know, last year's Sam Maguire, that's gone, it's done. We're starting out now as a team that isn't the cup holders. We're going to win the Sam Maguire. Whereas I said this to Kevin Doherty, are you kind of going in defending your title, or do you not get your players to think like that? And he says, no, we are. Like, we are defending the cup. It's ours. We're the champions, yeah, and we're going in to defend it. Vinny?
Yeah, that's it. Like, and you have to enjoy that expectation as well, I suppose. And like, looking at Drogheda, they've been, I suppose, with people that would have said halfway through the season, they're going to drop off at some stage. They're going to drop off here at some stage. And they really haven't. And like, they've only lost one in their last seven, ironically, to Derry City. So like, they're sticky for anyone to come up against. And yeah, it's a tough tie, very, very tough tie to call, I have to say. I know Benny thinks Derry will get over the line. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, the only challenge we have is that one could go on for a while, because they have a couple of keepers who like to go down injured as well, so that could be 120 minutes before extra time starts.
I was going to say the extra time thing, absolutely. Well, Turner's Cross, what a game we could have there as well. John Coleman, I spoke to after that game, and he certainly is very, I suppose, his interest has been piqued by Cork's kind of resurgence over the last couple of weeks, like to get, you know, points against Galway United and then against Cork City, Derry City, I should say, when they went up to the Brandywell last week. Are we starting to see Ger Nash starting to turn things there, Johnny, do you think?
Very possibly, Steve Owen. I think we probably saw signs of it today. Myself and yourself were in Turner's Cross for the game against Sligo. Like, we spoke the last time I was on the pod, we talked about, and Vinny spoke about, very much rightly so, about Cork being a bit more pragmatic, taking less chances at the back, maybe playing a little bit longer. And for the first hour against Sligo and Turner's Cross, they were perfect, pretty much perfect. Sligo hadn't really been in the game. They had gone 2-0 up. They had been much more direct, played much longer, and looked really comfortable in the game. And I think something that I said to you at the time was, I probably should have emphasised it more in commentary. What happened them that night was 4 minutes of naivety, essentially, in that they went 2-0 up. And for the 4 minutes after they went 2-0 up, it was almost as if Cork thought, oh, we can get a third here. We can really go and get a third here. And the game turned into a bit of a basketball match. It was end-to-end, spaces opened up, and all of a sudden, Jada Kiki, for the first time in the whole game, got the ball in the pocket of space, found Owen Elding, bang, 2-1. And the change in the atmosphere was just palpable straight away. Everyone could feel it, and it just changed the whole course of the game. But obviously, in the two games since that, they've kept two clean sheets. They've managed to do that for 90 minutes. And, you know, it looks from the outside anyway like they've turned a corner. Now, that for all that, Waterford certainly will put that to the test at the weekend, no doubt.
Yeah, they certainly will. It is interesting, Vinny, and we'll give you our flowers there, because it was almost like Mr. Nash had been listening to your analysis during the week, because it was obvious the amount of change that they made. But as well, the kickouts were going bang right up into the other end of the field, and they were looking for, you know, whatever knockdowns or flick-ons, whatever the case may be. And it certainly did pay off, the change. Interestingly, that Paddy McLean header that Sligo Rovers scored, myself and Johnny were watching it, Vinny, the whole game. They were hitting in-swinger corners in for the whole match, Sligo Rovers. And then the first out-swinger they hit, Paddy McLean goes up, heads it home. So it just goes to show you as well, little tactical changes like that from the opposition team working. But anyway, I digress. Your kind of thoughts on Cork City and Waterford this weekend?
Yeah, it's an interesting. Waterford are up and down, aren't they? There's times they're really good and there's times they look really poor. But I don't think Nash is listening to me. I think he's learning. He's learning the league. That was my only point. Would they be in better served? I think Jared Nash would ultimately, it's going to be really strong for them over time, but would they be in better served hiring somebody from the league and having a right cut-off catching Sligo? Feels like whatever they do now feels a little bit too late. We probably hope it's not again. But look, it's the FAI Cup. It's anything can happen. And people will say, oh, you're better off focusing on this and that. No, I think every team wants a run at this cup now. And obviously, it's also a way into Europe. So I think that's set up to be a good game. You'd have to say Waterford are favourites, but it wouldn't shock you if Cork won that game.
Yeah. You mentioned Sligo Rovers there. They're away, Johnny, this weekend to, I'm actually doing this game myself on LOI TV, away to Bohemians at Dalymount Park. Bohemians, you know, they've been playing really well, got themselves up in the second place. They have managed to hang on to second place despite their recent run of draws. There's been a lot of draws over the last few weeks for Bohemians, but they will be happy enough still to hold on to that second place in the table. I'm sure, though, they'd enjoy a nice cup run, but they're coming up against a Sligo Rovers team that are in form. Well, the results might have gone against them the last couple of weeks. As we've mentioned here already, they are playing good football, and that actually has the makings of a really good cup tie as well.
Yeah, it looks like a super tie now on paper, Steve-O. Like, I suppose, from a Bowes perspective, as you say, they've struggled to convert the draws into wins. And I know the managers had different opinions on the game against Shales the other week. But really, if you're winning, I should say, in the 88th minute, you'd expect to see the game out. And it was probably disappointing from a Bowes perspective that they didn't. They'll be looking at this, as an opportunity for a cup run. But Sligo are going to be hurting after the last day. No doubt they're going to use it as motivation for this game, I'd say. And like, if you just go back even before they got the two red cards, let's say the games before that, they were unbeaten against the top three in the league and beat two of them before that. So it's no shock that they've been playing well. And look, with the calibre of players that they have, as I say, Hakiki, Elding, who's attracting interest from elsewhere, which is brilliant to see for the league. They can give Bowes plenty of problems as well.
Yeah. I have a question for both of you on Bowes real quickly, because I don't know the answer to this. I'm nearly afraid to answer in my own head. What is James Taylor like? What's the ceiling? What are you expecting from how many goals has he got this season, and how many can he get? Like, because it feels like they're not converting all of the chances, this Bowes team. I'm not trying to be critical of him. I'm just asking, what do you see when you watch him? What's your perception of him as a centre forward?
You see, the thing is, Vinny, like he hasn't had a run yet in this Bohemians team since coming in. Like he came in, started against St. Pat's. That game, I remember, I did mention it before on the podcast, the win that game was ridiculous in Inchicore. And every time they tried to get the kickouts up to him, the ball was holding up in the air. You know, it was hard to kind of judge him on that. Scored in the match against Galway United. That was an incredible finish that set Bowes off in the win. And then he gets ill and injured for the next two games. And then obviously came off the bench against Shell. Burn and had a great chance in the second half to score and didn't score. Probably should have, I think. But I think he is physically one of the most impressive looking players in the league. I think his physique, his fitness, his running ability is really good. We all know his technical ability from what we've seen throughout United. So just he hasn't really settled at Bowes just yet. He still has to get a run of games. I think he will score a lot of goals for him. I think Bowes will create a lot of chances for him. What's he got this season in the league? Sorry, he got two goals for Drogheda United before coming to Bowes, and he's got one goal for Bowes. So that's in 16 league appearances.
That's why I'm asking the leading question. Like, is he someone who's going to get 15, 16 with next season?
Yeah, I think he will.
Because he's on, like, them stats are really, like, I think they'll shock people, Steve-O, stats.
Yeah, I know.
Goals in 16 games, Johnny. Yeah. That's not. You're marking him. You're not going.
I don't know what you think, Johnny. He'll get more chances, I think, than he would have. This isn't to disrespect Drogheda United.
No, not at all. And again, like, these conversations are only, you know, football based objective conversations. Like, it's just about what we think of the player himself. Like, I've enjoyed watching him. Any time I've watched him, he is technically good and he gets himself into good areas. But I think to Vinny's point, if you were asking the question, is he prolific? He probably isn't. He's probably not one of those strikers where if a ball drops to him, you know it's going to end up in the back of the net. There are some like that where they might not get involved in general play or might not cause you all that many problems in general play, but you know if they get a chance, they'll score. And I'm not totally convinced he is that player yet, but as you say, it's going to take him a bit of time to settle into the Bowes team and exactly how they play. And, you know, he's got a lot of good players around him as well with Devoy and Tierney. He's going to get chances. So could he get 12 to 15 next year? He could, but I wouldn't like to bet on it at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's one to watch, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah.
I haven't made up my mind yet, so I just knew his stats and I was going, why is everyone presuming he's going to score lots of goals?
Because
it's not, like, the history's not there yet. And there is reasons for that, to be fair. So it's watch this space.
Yeah, it's certainly a fair point worth mentioning. Vinny, just on Sligo Rovers, because they've obviously got one man who's been, I think he's been instrumental over the last few weeks, from James McManus playing in midfield. He's almost like, another, you know, Dawson Devoy Mark II in the way that he plays the game. He's obviously not able to play against his parent club on Friday night. How do Sligo Rovers deal with that particular situation?
Yeah, I think that's the challenge. It's whether they end up with maybe Elding as a 10, and you get Ryan O'Kane and you get Will Fitzgerald on the other side. So, and they probably will go with two sixes then in behind, and Diggy might have to sit a little bit deeper. Maybe that's what one way of looking at it. But I think you're right to point out to him. I think it's someone who just needs to play football. Obviously, wasn't in favour of Bowles, and I think McManus has been really good for him. The other one is the obvious one, but McLean, it's the recruitment there. They've signed League of Ireland players who know the league, who know what it takes. Is it heading ability from corners has been exceptional. You go back to that goal against Cork, great example of it. So I think they'll have their work cut out. That Bowes midfield is as good as anything in the league when they're on form, whether it's Devoy, McDonald, Tierney, and whatever way they go, if they're playing, you know, it depends which way they go in terms of what they do up front. So I think they will have their hands full. I think that's the winning of the game. Can Sligo deal with that midfield of with Clark dropping in, whether he's playing up narrow or he's the false nine? If Sligo can deal with that, they've certainly got forward players that could cause a lot of problems. But I think that would be my concern over John Russell. We're about to get overrun in midfield.
Yeah. I do think it's a hard one to call as well. I wouldn't be calling any of the three fixtures we've mentioned already, and I certainly wouldn't be calling the Dublin Derby that's going to be taking place on Sunday over at Richmond Park. St. Patrick's Athletic against Shelburne You know the way there's some games during the season that get you rubbing your hands together and kind of go, I cannot wait for this match, and I cannot wait for St. Pat's against Shelburne. I think, what time's the kickoff? 5 o'clock.
Steve,
I'll be on the way to Croke Park, unfortunately, so I won't be able to watch it, Vinny.
I have to ask you, Steve, I was a Bowls man, right? So the two club Bowls people, let's say dislike, obviously there's three of them now, but that's a tough one. Who would you prefer to stay in? If Bowls, if Argman stayed in the competition, which team would you prefer to stay in the competition?
Vinny, you can't be asked.
That's a real, that's a real Gary Neville one, like choosing between two men to sleep with your wife. Like, that's a tough one.
You're asking me to break my journalistic integrity, Vinny, which always remains intact during these podcasts. But I suppose it's been always a bit of a friendly kind of relationship there between Bowls and Pats, hasn't there? I don't know.
Pats is not too bad, is it?
Yeah. I think if Bohemians move out of Daly Mount temporarily, maybe could they be playing at Richmond Park? I don't know. That decision has been made. But anyway, it should be a great game, though, shouldn't it? Johnny, do you want to say
cracking looking game, Steve. It's I suppose from a Pats perspective, or just looking at Pats now, you're looking at their last game, and obviously on paper it's a 3-0 win, but when you really delve into it, as Vinny says, 5 minutes before half time, it didn't feel anything like they were going to go and win that game 3-0. So are they a little bit fragile still? They might just be, you know, you could say that they've turned a corner, they've won a few games, but I'm not totally convinced yet. And Shelburne coming into the game now, disappointed obviously to get knocked out of Europe, but they've been on a very, very good run in the league. I think confidence is up as far as Shelburne are concerned. And for me, I think it's a difficult tie for Pats personally.
Yeah. Vinny, I suppose just in general, it'll be good to see two of either Finn Harps, Bray, Kerry or Cove Ramblers through to the next round. I know Colin Healy's been doing good work there. I think he's still kind of trying to put things together there at Kerry. They do have home advantage against Cove Ramblers, but the Rams are in great form at the moment. Obviously defeated Bray Wanderers last week. Bray in good form. Those two clubs might fancy a little run to a semi-final, maybe even a final if they can win their ties at the weekend.
Yeah, I think that's the magic of the cup. And like, you think about the next draw, for argument's sake. So say for example, Finn Harps were true, for argument's sake, none of the Dublin teams want to go up there. Like, just don't want to. It'd be a difficult night. I think Cove will cause their own problems as well. So if for example, Cove and Finn Harps win the next round of draw, you'd be looking at if you draw anybody at home, you'd say there's a potential upset there. So. But that's the magic of the cup, and you want these teams progressing, and it'd be great. It's good that you've got, like, there's some amazing ties in this round, but there's also good, decent ties in those sort of the sexy ones. So, I think I'd fancy Finn Harps at home only because it's a home, but Bray are playing really well, and Cove have been very, very good this year. Just need to go on a run, and maybe the cup can spark that gives them a better run, sort of as they chase down Dundalk and for that fourth division. So, it's still a brilliant competition. There should be the League Cup, should be still going as well. But it's a route to Europe. The rewards in Europe are huge. So, you have to believe. Like I think fourth division teams can get to a cup final. Mm. It is doable. The gap is getting bigger and bigger every year, but could happen, and they have to dream that way.
Sexy indeed. Yeah,
just quickly, if you don't mind, Steve, we're picking up on that. Like the Salthill Devon against Galway game, that's a real magic of the cup tie. Like, you know, that's Salthill came through a very tough game against St. Michael's from Tipperary, two really top junior teams in the country, and their reward now is playing Galway. And like, there's a lot of these Salthill Devon players that are former Galway players too, and they're now going to get a slap at them in the FAI Cup. So it's brilliant. It'll be a brilliant tie, brilliant atmosphere there as well. So looking forward to seeing how that goes too.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be interesting to see who's in the hat for the draw after the third round. Lads, it's been brilliant chatting to you this week. We've covered it all.
Yeah, but why are you going to Croke Park, by the way?
Well, I'm just about to say, we've had it all from you this week, Vinny. We've had swearing, we've had sex, you've drinking from a can there as well. It's like you're getting ready to go see Oasis yourself. No, it is a can of Coke, folks, if you are just listening and not watching us. But yeah, it seems like you're ready to go for Oasis this weekend. Are you heading?
No chance. No, I can't be buying tickets for spending 400 quid on something that's happening in 6 months' time. I just can't fathom that.
Vinny's more of a boys' life or a boys' own Westlife man. Anyway, Johnny, would you have been an Oasis man back in your day?
It would have been, Steve, if I could have got a ticket, I'd be there 100%. But, you know, I could see Vinny, all right. I could see Vinny at Westlake, all right, in Croke Park more.
Yeah, 100%. It's been absolutely brilliant. Michael Bublé, Jesus. Anyway, that's enough of that. Lads, brilliant stuff. Thanks a million, and thank you for listening.
The League of Ireland pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.